I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even in commentary. Nobody can touch me.
In the world, and this is CM Jew's Wrestling Reviews right here on the Absolution Network. This is episode 21, and I have been away for a while. Let's just say I've had to heal injuries. Kayfabe, excuse me. I've been away for about a month and a half. I think the last episode we did, or at least that I did for you, all the way back in August when I did SummerSlam 2005. So, and I think that was in the beginning of August, so it's been a while. And while I had some plans to do some shows, I had planned to do, you know, obviously we had NXT TakeOver 2 Electric Boogaloo, or as they currently like to call it, NXT 2 TakeOver 2 Fatal 4-Way. And I had planned on bringing Gene on, and actually T-Dub on as well, and to review that, along with, I wanted to review Unforgiven 2006, as I had yet to see that pay-per-view. I thought it was a really good pay-per-view, among other things, in particular for the ladder match between John Cena and Edge that everybody always gushes about. I had never actually gotten a chance to see that. I know, meet the C-Nazi. I've never seen what might be John Cena's greatest match ever among people. Though I'm of the opinion his best match ever is with CM Punk. And until that match, it was the one he did with Shawn Michaels. That's here or there. And we're not here to talk about John Cena. In fact, it is October, so ladies and gentlemen, before I go any further on what the topic and anything is, allow me to introduce you to Monster Mash Month. Maestro, if you will please.
What can he do?
What can he do? In the past 60 years, Humes have exterminated over 150 million of their own kind. No effort has been spared to reach this astronomical figure, and the methods that they have used must demand our unstinted admiration. You know, Humes began with certain very serious disadvantages, but these they overcame with wonderful ingenuity. Not having a fang or a claw, or even a whistle worth talking about, they invented guns and tanks and bombs and aeroplanes and extermination camps and poison gas and daggers and swords and bayonets and booby traps and atomic bombs and flying missiles, submarines, warships, aircraft carriers, and motor cars. They have even perfected a process whereby they can spread a lethal disease on any part of this planet. Not to say anything about nuclear power. Oh, during their short history, you know, Humes have subjected other Humes to death by burning, hanging, decapitation, strangulation, electrocution, shooting, drowning, crushing, racking, disemboweling, and other methods far, far too revolting for the delicate stomachs of this august assembly.
I never realized he was so talented.
We don't like to boast.
I second the proposal. A member of such a talented race can only be a frigate to any monster club!
Maestro, to celebrate the installation of a new member, may we hear our song.
I was waking in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight. For my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash. From my laboratory in the castle east to the master bedroom where the vampires feast.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, that's right. It is Monster Mash Month right here on the Absolution Network. It's a big event I do every October. We'll have specials and everything. Hopefully, I'll be able to have specials. As my desktop doesn't have internet connection right now. I say that because right now I'm doing this on my laptop to peel back the curtain. I can't do anything with anybody. Hopefully, I'll be able to rectify that and be able to do some stuff with some people. Because I definitely want to get a Halloween special out. But, you know, with Tom's prerogative, everything is horror-themed. And as for CMG's wrestling reviews, you know, how do we make this horror-themed? Well, there's one pay-per-view event I can think of that used to happen every October, or at least when I was growing up in the 90s, I know it happened every October. It was actually, as far as theming was concerned, was one of my favorite pay-per-views to watch. And that was Halloween Havoc. You know, in fact, one of the first pay-per-views I actually bought when I came back to wrestling. I told you it was the World Wild 99, which we've reviewed. But the other one was Halloween Havoc. And again, the theme. I always loved the theme. Match again, the horror concept, and it just seemed like this was like the one pay-per-view where WCW had fun with its card and everything, which is what some pay-per-views used to be. Some pay-per-views used to be fun cards. You know, title would change hand, maybe wouldn't. The real action happened in the mid-card, but it was all about the sort of fun match. You know, Taboo Tuesday, I thought, was kind of like this as well, to where it was really about the sort of the theme and everything. So, all this month, I will be reviewing Halloween Havoc. So, which Halloween Havoc are we starting today? Are we starting with the very first one? And I actually thought about doing that. But as I looked at the Halloween Havoc, I thought, you know, this year I want to start off with the things I want to cover. I actually started watching Halloween Havoc 1989, but I didn't make it all the way through, actually. Though it was fun seeing Bad Street USA of Michael P.S. Hayes and Jimmy Garvin go up against Mr. People Power himself, John Laurinaitis. And the franchise, Shane Douglas, a.k.a. the Dudes, not the Dudes, why are they calling the Dudes? Whatever their surfer tag, for whatever reason, I can't remember what their sort of skateboard tag team is called. It was something. Being managed by, the other guy, I can't remember, damn. Anyways, so, back to the point, so this week, we are reviewing Halloween Havoc 1991. There's a reason for this. Halloween Havoc 1991 has a very specific match, a match that I was very surprised turned out to be the very first match of the night. A match I didn't even know exist until I got the WWE Network. So this is essentially one of those pay-per-views that got sold to me because of the network. What on the network sold me this match? Well, it was the Legends of Wrestling. And they were actually talking about it was the Bad Gimmick episode. And they actually sort of expanded it to concepts. And, of course, you had Dusty Rhodes there. So, of course, he talked about Shawn McIntyre. But, you know, you had Dusty Rhodes there. You had Michael P.S. Hayes. You had Cactus Jack. I can't remember who the fourth member. I think it was maybe Jim Ross. Anyways, but the other concept that Dusty Rhodes said he came up with in a code sweat was the Chamber of Horrors match. And I'm like, oh my god, I have to watch this match now. I have to watch this match. And so that what really drove me to want to watch Halloween Havoc 1991. And I'll say some matches surprised me, some were underwhelming. We're going to have fun tonight. So ladies and gentlemen, I want to say we get right into it. Before that, of course, that means I have to give you our breakdown. So ladies and gentlemen, Halloween Havoc 1991 with the tagline Chamber of Horrors. And oh, what a Chamber of Horrors it was. This pay-per-view took place on October 27th, 1991 from the UTC Arena in Chattanooga, Tennessee. It featured an attendance of 8,900 and would be a feature your backstays. Commentators of Miss Hyatt and Eric Bischoff before, you know, he got control of the company. And, of course, your color commentators for the matches would be Jim Ross and Tony Schiavone. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Halloween Havoc 1991. What shocked me right off the bat was very first match is the cage match, the Chamber of Horrors match. Now, if you've never seen this pay-per-view, never heard of this pay-per-view, never heard of this concept, so here's this concept, which, as Dusty Rhodes said, he thought up apparently in a cold sweat at the middle of the night, and it shows. The concept of the match is that there's these two teams of four wrestlers, and the objective is to, I guess, get one of their opponents in the chair, which is basically an electric chair that will at some point come down from the middle. I guess there's a hole in the cage. It's one of those cages that goes up and then has sort of a roof, but there's a hole in the roof for this small little cage to come down that opens up and it has basically electric chair. And they have to strap one of the members of the other team in the chair, and then there's a switch on one of the walls of the ring, inside the ring, that they have to climb and throw to basically electrocute their opponent. Mind you, this cage is a big cage. It's like a Hell in a Cell cage in a way, as far as the concept of that. It not only does it surround the ring, but it also surrounds the ringside area. You know, kind of like a Hell in a Cell ring does. Interesting idea and concept. Execution, as we will talk about. First, our competitors. So, the Chambers of Horror match features El Gigante before he would wear a fur bodysuit in WWE. The WCW United States World Heavyweight Champion Sting. the Steiner brothers, Rick and Scott, versus Abdullah the Butcher, the Diamond Stud, you know, before he became Razor Ramon. You know, the guy who would later on become Scott Hall. Cactus Jack and Big Von Vader. So, a couple of interesting notes. The original mask was supposed to be El Gigante staying in his diners versus Oz, the Diamond Stud, the One Man Gang, and Barry Windham. Now, Oz would be basically switched to another, basically, they basically switched the match that Cactus Jack was originally scheduled for, which was against Bill Kazmir. We'll get to that later, and who Oz is later. Though you wrestling fans will know who Oz is. The One Man Gang was supposed to take part in it, but he left WCW before the pay-per-view. So he was replaced by Abdullah. And Barry Windham, which again is a very odd choice. That, first of all, the original team doesn't make sense personally. But, and please ignore the ghosts in my head. Barry Windham, and I guess in the scheduled storyline, was attacked by Arn Anderson and Larry Bzyska, who were tag team champions. I guess they were cutting off the competition and the whole Four Horsemen thing, I guess. Basically suffers a broken hand before the show. I don't know whether kayfabe or not. I can't find any information whether it was kayfabe or not. I would imagine it was. Yeah, this match happened. Mind you, I watched this because I watched this pay-per-view in parts. I watched it on my laptop after work. I watched before work, mind you. I watched it at school and I watched it at home. I watched this part before work one day. And my friend happened to be on break and sat next to me. He watched and he's like, and his exact comments for this match was every 5 seconds saying, "What the fuck? What the fuck?" To which I agree, what the fuck? This is a clusterfuck. This match, as it was presented, is a literal definition of a clusterfuck. It just seems to be really... Yes, the concept seems interpretive, but really, until that chair comes down, it's just people beating the shit out of each other. Which I guess people want to see. But yeah, it's... Really no rhyme and reason to anything. I mean, outside of it's interesting to see all the, you know. But by the way, take a shot every time I mention the name of a wrestler who will later become a big star under a different name in the WWE. Should have made mention of that drinking game before, because we'll be talking about a lot of them. But yeah, you know, it's interesting that Diamond Stud before he become who he would. And it was interesting, again, it's always wonderful to see before they would become big in the WWE. So it really was a cluster. I mean, and really the biggest clusterfuck of this match was, and again, this is why I actually watched it too, which is the sad part, because Dusty Rhodes talked about this, was the goddamn lever. Who divides a lever to fall down? And it falls down twice. And then, of course, the genius of the camera crew to put the camera on it and to keep filming it. I mean, thank God, as Dusty Rhodes said, thank God that Mick Foley had the presence of mind to raise the freaking lever back up before switching it down. And even that, it's like, how does he not know Abdullah's being put in there? This doesn't make sense. And then there's the undead attendees that will take the Electrocuted Man out afterwards. It didn't make sense. So, yeah, this match was just a giant clusterfuck. But I think it's a clusterfuck that's worth seeing at least once. Our next match is Big Josh, a man who would later be known as Doink the Clown, versus PN News, versus the Creatures of Joey Maggs and Johnny Rich. Why does that name sound familiar? I knew that name sounds familiar. And I understand it was with the creatures that you. I'm looking at his thing now. Never really had anything, did he? Yep. It for whatever reason, some name sounds like familiar, like somebody who had a bigger role. Well, anyways, well, in this case, they're wearing masks and they call themselves the creatures. This was just a match to feature two faces. In this case, it was Big Joe and PN News, and apparently there were some contests that had gone up before where somebody could do a rap for, where somebody was asked to create a rap for PN News because he was a rapping wrestler. It was a piss break. It really was. Why you needed a piss break early on, I guess people needed time to, you know, wash out of their mind the match that just happened. Though I will say this, it was interesting to see a 401-pound man do basically a splash from the top rope. That was interesting. Next we have our first good match of the evening. We have Bobby Eaton versus Terrence Taylor. In, I guess, a match between a number 10. They had at the time, WCW had, you know, a rating system for the wrestlers for, like, who would challenge, like, the belts. And Terrence Taylor, who was, at the time part of the, I'm trying to remember, what was it called? It was something Foundation. I apologize as I look it up. The York Foundation. He was trying to find the name of the reason why I find the name because it was freaking Terry Reynolds. That's who it was. Who was his Alexander York? By the name was his manager, who is, as I correctly guessed, Terry Reynolds. That's about as close as. What's all? I know T Dub hates that. I really like her, but goddamn, you know. Say, I understand people may hate stuff she's done, but goddamn the woman. Oh, and in a business suit. Well, I got what I needed in this pay per view. Thank you. Goodbye. But no, this was a really good match. They both told a good story. And it was interesting, the story they told, considering there really wasn't much on the line other than basically trying to improve their rank. Bobby Eaton put himself, I think, definitely in line for the WCW television title. And it was just a good, solid match. It went for a good 60 minutes. So solid. And everything. And then you had our next match. You had Johnny B. Badd, managed at the time by Theodore Long, versus Jimmy Garvin of Bad Street with Michael P.S. Hayes. I found this a really enjoyable and fun match. I mean, there's a reason Michael P.S. Hayes and the Freebirds are talked about, and why, more importantly, they should be in the goddamn Hall of Fame. This match was just fun. And then, of course, Johnny B. Badd, just the wackiness that wrestler was at that time. Crazy. It was fun to kind of see Johnny B. Badd actually be portrayed as a heel that early on. Because I always thought he was always portrayed as a face. But here he really was a heel. So that was interesting. And then we have another great match. This time went 15 minutes because it went to a time limit draw. Our next match is the WCW World Television Champion Steve Austin versus Dusty Rhodes for the WCW World Television Championship. This was just a great match. I mean, if you think Stone Cold Steve Austin was all about just mud hole stomping and all of that, you don't know Steve Austin. This was a great look at, you know, Steve Austin early on in his career, and you could see all the potential he had. And it just shows you just what a bunch of jackasses and assholes WCW was for all the talent that they basically let go. I mean, when you, I mean, just with this match alone, you have to take two shots, by the way, if you're not already drunk and dead. But just, again, all this talent would go to WWE and help them win the Monday Night Wars. It's amazing. Again, time limit draw. Solid match. The only thing I can criticize of it is that what a lot of these WCW Tag Television Championship, when they go to a draw, it seems like the wrestlers don't even know what the time limit, even though there's an announcer saying 1 minute left. And there doesn't seem to be any urgency in what they're doing. It's like, that's a storytelling misstep. They should have more urgency. Our next two matches are squash matches, basically. And again, after three, I think, good, solid matches, I guess the crowd really needed it in preparation for what would come. The first match is Scott Kazmir versus Oz. You don't know who Oz is? Oh my god! It's Diesel! Diesel's back! The man who would go on to become Big Sexy Kevin Nash. Same for Diamond Stud, a.k.a. Scott Hall. It's interesting to see the early personas. And here in particular, to see Kevin Nash as basically a jobber to Bill Kazmir, the so-called strongest man on the earth world. And his ring entrance with this big, giant inflatable earth on his shoulders, which is, I guess it works. Maybe to Oz submit to a torture rack, which is interesting, considering what our main event is. Our next match, again, a squash match. Originally, it was supposed to be Doug Summers versus Michael Piazza, but instead, it was the pay-per-view debut of Von Hammer. You know, the man who would later go on to become Hammer in Raven's Flock, and would also be Private Stash. Major Stash in Misfits in Action. One of the few good things that WCW did later, late in its life. The Misfits in Action. But, it was Van Hammer versus Doug Summers. Squash match. Of course, Van Hammer defeats Doug Summers with his, I guess at the time, his finishing move, which was called Hammer Rocks, which is a slingshot suplex, though it looked like it needed some work. But, yeah, this is a squash match. And if you look at the two times of the past two matches, which is Bill Kazmir defeating Oz in 3 minutes and 59 seconds, and then Van Hammer defeating Doug Summers in 1 minute 13, it was basically, it was a squash. It gave him about a 5-minute break for the fans. Which is good, because our next match, everybody wanted to stay in their seats for. Our next match was Brian Pillman versus Richard Morton of the York Foundation for the WCW Light Heavyweight Championship. This was just a solid match all around. Brian Pillman, I always thought, did good work. You saw his potential. Yet again, another wrestler who would be taken way before his time. Solid match. Enjoyed the ending, the body splash. Out of nowhere. I love the fact that, you know, Pillman feigns an injury and then climbs on the top rope, and it's that surprise body splash out of nowhere for the win. So just a great job all around. Just a very solid match. Nowhere near the best match of the night, but still a solid match. Our next match would be the WCW Phantom versus the Z-Man. Now, Z-Man is a wrestler who never got to WWE, went anywhere other than WCW. You had this storyline going out throughout the night where they were talking like that the WCW Phantom would appear at Halloween Havoc. And he challenged somebody, and guess Z-Man answered. And they were talking about, we're trying to find the Phantom. And we're trying to find the Phantom, trying to unmask him, and nobody could. It was a squash match. It basically was a setup for a promo that would happen after the next match. with the little clue that's given in the match being the fact that the finisher is a hanging net breaker. In fact, when it happens, Tony Schiavone says, you know, there are very few signature maneuvers in professional wrestling. And I believe the Phantom just used one that's called the Rude Awakening. Yep. This is what this pay-per-view is going to become known for. And I didn't even know it was this pay-per-view. I'm happy I watched this pay-per-view. Because the other reason, outside of the Chambers of Horror match, there was another reason I initially watched it. I turned out to be wrong, but I didn't know about this one, which I'll get to in a second. And I was pleasantly surprised. But we'll get to that. Our next match is the Enforcers, Arn Anderson and Larry Zbyszko, versus the Patriots of Todd Champion and Firebreaker Chip for the WCW World Tag Team Championships. Now, the Patriots were the current WCW United States Tag Team Champions, though that was not on the line. I guess it was solid. It's fun seeing Larry Zbyszko wrestle, but the real treat was getting to watch Arn Anderson. And in this match, I think it was made clear that Arn Anderson was the best wrestler in the ring. Bar none. With that, let's move on to our next match of the evening. Actually, squash that. Before we get to that match, there's one more thing that happens before the final main event match. That is that there is a promo cut by Paul E. Dangerously. Well, basically, Bischoff says he's a special guest, and it's Paul E. Dangerously with Medusa and says, you know, basically saying, I was suspended by the WCW committee. Well, I'm going to stick it back to the classic Paul promo form. It's like, he had it then, he has it forever, he has it now. There's a reason Paul Heyman is so loved. And it's classic young Paul Heyman promo, and it's a beautiful thing to watch. And he talks about how I'm going to stick it to by destroying your superstars and start with this guy. Now comes the Phantom. And he takes the Phantom's mask off, and it's obviously Rick Rude. Thus we see the start of Paul E. Dangerously's Dangerous Alliance. And then Rick Rude cuts an awesome promo. It's actually funny, I watched that, and then the more recent WWE Countdown, where they count down ring gear, which Rick Rude is a part of, and they're showing one of his promos, and it's this exact promo. I'm like, there are three things I care about. I care about my women, I care about my championships, and I care about my money. So that was interesting to see. It was a great promo. Our final match tonight was for the WCW World Heavyweight Championship in a 2-out-of-3 falls match with Lex Luger with Harley Race versus Ron Simmons. With Dusty Rhodes. Now, I actually thought this was the match in which Ron Simmons won it. That actually turns out to be almost a year from now. As I look at my notes that I have, that would a little under a year it would happen. But yeah, you know what? This was a very enjoyable match. And, you know, seeing Ron Simmons before his accurate days when he was more of a singles competitor, you saw how raw he was. So that was very interesting to see. I think the thing that hurts this match, though, is that second fall, though. The disqualification of Simmons for throwing Luger over the top rope. Again, that over the top rope disqualification rule that never made sense. In particular, like, what ref sees that and thinks that Simmons threw him over the rope? It was a cross body blow by Luger, and you could just imagine that Simmons hung on and was able to stay in the ring. It doesn't make sense. How would anybody sit there, especially due to things that happened earlier in the night where it's guys ducking and literally throwing guys over the top rope, back body dropping them over the rope, and it doesn't get result in disqualification. This is the problem with the rule. It never made sense, and it hurts it here because when you see those that should have been obvious, and you have this one that looks like, oh, they call it a disqualification? What the fuck? It never made sense. It never made sense, and it really hurts the match, I think, because it is like there's no continuity here. It kind of takes you out of the match. Though with that being said, I thought Ron Simmons and Lex Luger did a good job. It was a nice, solid match. The excitement, in particular, at the end, you think Simmons is going to win, especially me being a Florida State guy. It was actually pretty amazing how many Florida State fans were there, considering that it's freaking Chattanooga, Tennessee. Tennessee Vol Country, and I can tell you for a minute, Tennessee hates Florida, but I guess it only is left. I guess they like Florida State, but they just hate the Florida Gators, I guess. I don't know. Anyways, match ends with Luger pinning Simmons after a pile driver, which I find interesting is Lex Luger calls the pile driver the attitude adjustment. So John Cena should really be sued by Lex Luger for copyright infringement, shouldn't he? Not that I think he should, but if there's any way I can get the WWE to change the name back to the FU, I'll take it at this point. So that was Halloween Havoc. I guess it's time for us to go down moments. I'll start off with moments. Wow. It's really hard to choose to get to nothing. There's no moments that really stick out in my mind. I mean, there's a fine body slash for the win by Brian Pillman. That's one. This Bobby Eaton finish to the match, the diving leg drop, which was really impressive. And then I guess I'll have big Pia News' body splash that was pretty impressive. Those are like the big spots that like stand out to me that I can really only think of. As far as my favorite matches are concerned, number three would be Johnny B. Badd versus Jimmy Garvin. Number two would be Bobby Eaton versus Terrence Taylor. And number three would be Steve Austin versus Dusty Rhodes. I think and it's interesting, you have all those three are basically in a line with Bobby Eaton versus Terrence Taylor first, then Johnny B. Badd versus Jimmy Garvin, and then the WCW Television Championship. You have those three matches in line. They are simply the three best matches of the night, would be with Steve Austin, Dustin Rhodes match being the best. So at the end of the day, you know what? There are a lot of things to watch Halloween Havoc 1991 for. The Chamber of Horrors match is worth watching once because it's such a clusterfuck. And you have to watch clusterfucks just once. You have some solid good matches from WCW's mid cards, from the Light Heavyweight Championship, the World Television Championship match, and a couple of the ranked wrestlers matches. There's a fair number, unfortunately, of squash matches and everything. The tag championship match really isn't impressive, other than getting to watch Arn Anderson be the best goddamn wrestler in the world at that time. And the World Heavyweight Championship match is a solid match. It's got a lot of excitement around it, but at the end feels like a letdown. So at the end of the day, I give WCW Halloween Havoc 1991 a 3 out of 5. Solid pay-per-view. Worth at least watching once just for... I would say WCW Halloween Havoc 1991 is worth watching at least once for the Chamber of Horror match, the Steve Austin Dusty Rhodes match, and for the start, what would be the start of the Dangerous Alliance. So that's my view, ladies and gentlemen, because I am CM Jew, the best Jew in the world. Remember, if you have any comments, any messages you want to leave me, there are several ways you can contact me. One, you can leave a message at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's all one word, absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That is our where you can email us at. You can also leave a comment on our Stitcher and Facebook account that you can find at www.stitcher.com and www.facebook.com. Just go there and search for the Absolution Network. Find us and leave us a message. And you can always leave a comment on the website itself that you can find at www.an.132productions.com. You can make sure you also check out all the other 132 Productions content. This, of course, includes everything on the Absolution Network. Tom's Prerogative, Tom's Top 10, all our stuff on comedy. Of course, like I said, it's Monster Mash Month. We're having fun. Of course, John Ramos' videos, Shin Tiger Curl's videos, and so much more. Hopefully, it'll be coming soon. Of course, there's Gene and Chris and the Shaft Plus podcast at www.shaftplus.com. And of course, you have my Tokyo SOS podcast that you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. Featuring both my Tokyo SOS A Godzilla podcast and soon my Tokyo SOS Sentai Force podcast, where I review Super Sentai and Kamen Rider movies and tokusatsu movies as well, since I have an easier access to them now, it seems. And then, of course, there's my comic book crazy podcast insight featuring Hexcast, the only podcast that reviews every issue of Jim Bale and Sarah Witch of the Black Rose, all my comic book crazy and CM Jew's comic book crazy podcasts, and all my Spectacular Webs podcast, which reviews every episode, or almost every episode, of the Spectacular Spider-Man animated series. You can find that at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And, of course, on all the sites is our sidebar that features our friends. Make sure you check them out. That, of course, includes Michael Bailey and Views from the Long Box, along with From Crisis to Crisis that he does with Jeffrey Taylor, Maddie Jane, of course, TWK, and the WrestleCast, Steven Schleicher and the Major Spoilers podcast, and, of course, Scott Gunner and his Two Freaks podcasting network. So that is it for this episode of CMG's Wrestling Reviews. The next episode, again, it's Halloween Havoc, but which Halloween Havoc are we going to review? Well, it's a Halloween Havoc where we spin the wheel and make a deal. Ladies and gentlemen, next week we review Halloween Havoc 1993. So until next time, my wrestling fans, just want you to remember one goddamn thing about me, CM Jew. I'm the best Jew in the world!
You're all that I have and you're all that I need. Each and every day I pray to get to know you. Please wanna be close to you. Yes, I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you, there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around all around, I believe it. I'm too negative, but deep, but I believe. Yes, I believe. I said that I believe. Stand on two feet, one be brought down on one knee. I fight with all of my might and get these demons to flee. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Out of darkness comes light, twilight and to the heights. Crown lights burning up, out of to the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my mind. And I'm the spirit man of who we hold in a ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want Mashiach now. Time it starts a feeling. What's this feeling? My love will rip a hole in a ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want Mashiach now. Stripping away the layers and reveal your soul. You gotta give yourself up and then you become whole. You're a slave to yourself and them don't even know. Them mother to live that fast life but your dream.